This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
We are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. And I say I'm always giddy on Thursdays because I get to hook up with my guys, my bros, my fellas from MGO Blog for the MGO Blog Roundtable. Always, even after losses, I mean, I look forward to the 7 because we can go back and forth about what happened, but especially after victories, as we can go back and offer analysis and commentary on that here on the MGO Blog Roundtable, starting off with the guy that
old person.
He peeps through windows. And I'm like, Craig, I mean, the first time you did it, it freaked me the heck out. This time I was like, Craig, didn't we just go through this last week, man?
We'll get it solved.
Craig Ross here in studio this morning. And so glad that you're we can have you back in the house, Craig. It feels like normal.
Yeah, I love being here. I'd much rather be here than be in my basement looking at a computer terminal. It's just nicer.
Yeah,
and I miss seeing you and Ira anyway, so it's just pleasant to be here.
It's good to see you, Craig Ross, in studio. And then the miracle of technology. It's like he's here. Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Yep. Seth, how are you this morning?
I am the only one of us wearing maize. I just want to point this out. All the rest of you guys aren't in your maize yet. You're supposed to be in maize all the time.
All week?
Yes, all week. All week. You're not supposed to change the clothes either. You just kind of like put your maize clothes on, and then we're all going to get to the stadium just like reeking. So Washington gets there and be like, what is wrong with these people? I put his maize on.
I just have long sleeves over it.
Yeah. Do we have maize polos, Ira? Do we have to put that on?
No, we don't have maize polos. We are kind of excluded. We're in the booth anyway. We're not in the stands.
I understand that. But
I am going to be wearing maize to walk around tailgate all day, though.
We have blue polos. We have white polos. Why don't we?
The maize ones were not. They had black stripes on the side, and I wasn't wearing Steelers colors.
Oh, okay. Oh, far be it. I mean, of course not. Never for a Ravens fan, right? But guys, we all had expectations heading into this game about what we would see, how they would look, what the score would be. I did not have Michigan. I had them sort of pulling away in the second half of this game, winning comfortably after a half where it was sort of back and forth. Well, move that up a quarter because it was back and forth in the first quarter. And then from that point on, from the second quarter on, Michigan really asserted itself and took control of this game. I'm curious how the outcome and what led to the outcome, you know, sort of fit with your expectations heading to the game.
Craig. Well, I'm not particularly surprised by the offense. Michigan gained over 550 yards, but the Western defense is terrible. They were terrible last year, right. And so it was easy to predict that. I was a bit frustrated, like many fans, early on when this isn't exactly speed and space.
But
this
is like mud.
You prepared me for it. Yes, it was mud and sludge, and early on, and I have a friend who I heard his voice in my head saying, "Just shoot me now," early in the game. But when Michigan took the top off the defense on one or two plays, I think Seth pointed this out. The linebackers sort of slid back a bit, and then the next thing you know, Michigan was running it up, you know, quite efficiently. But in the end, that wasn't a huge surprise. The surprise to me was how well the defense played. And the truth is, without a taunting penalty and without the, I think it was a roughing the kicker penalty, Western might not have scored at all in this game. And Western should have, and I mean, they have a good quarterback. They have an experienced offense, and that, and I'm guessing they're going to score a lot of points this year, but, the Michigan defense really played quite well.
Mm-hmm. Seth?
Yeah, I was surprised they passed as much as they did. You know, that the running game was working so well. Why would you ever want to go and pass it again? I guess, like, once you got your backups in, then you might as well test them. But, like, you know, 3-4 passes? Isn't that a little excessive, Sam? Like, I mean, there was one point where they had 18 plays in a row that were either a run or a screen. They did not throw the ball past the line of scrimmage for 18. So, when you were talking last week about how Michigan wants to run the ball, and I was saying, no, I mean, no way are coaches really going to tip their hand that much. They're telling you that to set up their play action. You weren't kidding. They wanted to run that ball, didn't they?
You know, I guess what surprised me about it was they didn't, I mean, it wasn't like a huge menu of run plays.
Oh, no, no. It's split zone.
Split zone again.
Right.
Every play was let's kick out the edge and run inside. When I did the scoring for this, there were very, very few points for any of the tackles. Like Stuber, I didn't get to really, and it wasn't because he's not doing anything. It's just because of our system, like, only grades you if you were involved in that in the result of that play. And Stuber was always like one or two blocks away from like the block that was happening that like was causing things. So Michigan wanted to run off tight end, and they wanted to, you know, kick a guy out with a polar. And so I got a lot of grades for Vastardis. I got a lot of Filianga. I got a lot of Keegan. I did not get a lot, and Zinter. Oh, he was Zinter. Once his hand is ready, he's playing with one hand. Yeah, and all the pass protection problems were him. Now I get it, because Zinter could not pass block, and every time he made a run block, that guy just moved. It was just like he was just ejecting people, and not even the bad people. Like, I talked about that Ali Fayed guy a million times. I'll do it again, because he like was blowing plays up by himself, and then he hit Zinter, and all of a sudden, cling, like, he's gone.
Yeah, it was, it was question whether he was gonna play, but I think that they felt like, you know, you warm him back up into his, because I don't know how much he practiced. I don't know. I didn't get details on that, but there are some questions about, you know, what will his availability be for this game, at least from the outside. It was good that he was able to get his feet wet, get some action. I was impressed by Andrew Vastardis in this game. I thought he had himself a day. And so I lead with that because I was one, admittedly, who said, hey, you know what? Zach Zinter is center. Mm-hmm. That's really intriguing. That's really enticing.
Right,
but that can open up.
You move Stuber to guard and maybe Trente Jones over to right tackle.
Well,
and
we saw Trente Jones in their big packages.
Yeah.
But Vastardis, what came back to me as I was asking around about that, I said, man, Vastardis is having a good camp. And he's not the one who plays right down. Vastardis is not the reason. And then you see him in this game, like, okay.
Well,
that's what they were talking
there's
about.
There's the play on the sweep, and I'm not sure which sweep it was.
It was the Henning. When Vastardis got out there and reached the linebacker and takes him out, like,
yeah, that was a wrinkle. Yeah. That was a wrinkle in this game because Vastardis really technically took out two players on that play. I hadn't seen them do that before. He bluffs the end on that play, and so I actually had to ask, like, first of all, did he bluff it? Because it looked like he did. Al saw it first. I had him going around the edge, and because the end looked so confused on that play, he was just out of sorts. Vastardis comes around and he blows out the linebacker, right? But he bluffs the end first.
Yeah.
So the athleticism, the awareness to still be able to get a guy and actually get him on the ground, he had himself a good day.
Add that to the fact that he snapped the ball. I mean, he's got to snap the ball. He's got to snap it accurately. And then he's pulling. And he's pulling. He's got, you know, it was truly a remarkable.
Right. And so play. And understand, when he pulls, he has to bait that in. He has to, you know, stop for or hesitate for a little beat to bait that in, then get up the field and still find a linebacker. He did all of that on that play.
Well, I think PFF had him as their first team All-American center this week. And so it didn't go unnoticed, obviously. Mm-hmm. And you know who else played well, in my opinion, and I think Seth graded him out pretty well too, is Chuck Filiaga, who we had some questions about.
So Filiaga, the difference between Filiaga and Vestardis is Vestardis was mostly going against Ralph Holley, who is a legit tackle. And that was the guy who was shooting into the backfield all the time. And I thought Vestardis did a very good job to, on a down-and-down basis, guess what Holley was going to do and lock him into whatever he was. So if he jumped in the backfield, just lock him back there. It was very like Graham Glasgow-esque. Right, where he just he saw what was happening in front of him and did something about it. Filiaga, this was his kind of game because he was getting that nose tackle a lot, and that nose tackle was terrible. So I want to pump the brakes a little bit on Filiaga just because his assignment was not that hard, and this is a MAC guy that he went against.
Yeah, I want to say there was a split zone in the first series where he got pushed in the backfield.
Mm-hmm.
And Hassan Haskins still made the play because it's Hassan Haskins, right? Where he's going to sidestep that first guy and still get up the field. But I agree with your overall point there, Seth, because they have been saying really good things about Chuck Filiaga. Let me stipulate that. They said he had a
good
camp.
It looks like he lost a little bit of weight to me. I mean, I don't know, but he looked.
Yeah. He didn't miss assignments. That was the big thing. He was missing assignments last year, and this time he didn't miss any assignments.
Yeah, so I agree with that, and yet they, you know, the performance against that defensive line is the performance they were supposed to have.
I agree.
Against that kind of defensive line. So you like seeing them working in concert, guys targeting the right guys, you know, executing blocks on the second level. You like to see all of that. Then you keep perspective and say they're going to see much better defenses and defensive lines than the ones they saw in this game.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see this week. I mean, even though Washington was dreadful on offense, they still seem to have a pretty good defense, even, you know, was against Montana. But I suspect that it's going to be a much more difficult task than Western Michigan's defense, which isn't good.
Right, so we didn't see an array of offense in this game, right? We saw an establishment of identity. This is an identity game. We're working on our identity, not showing our hand, only busting out a wrinkle or two. Like I did ask, did you guys ever bluff and pull the center and bluff the end with the center last year? And they hadn't. So that was a new wrinkle. Yeah. That was new. It led to a score, but clearly there weren't many plays of that variety, things they hadn't done before in this particular game. We will see if they unload more in this next game. I anticipate they will, because did you guys see a single pin and pull?
No, there were
no pin and pulls.
There was one of the
end arounds looked like a pin and pull.
Sorts.
I did see some Matt Weiss things where like the motions I think are more complex for the defense to read than they were last year. Last year a lot of the motions were just like, let's just flare our running back out and that's going to take a linebacker out of the game. And this time they were doing a lot of things where like one guy is motioning across and then another guy comes across too, and then you get some counteraction in the backfield. And those are really hard plays for the linebackers. And one of the big quorum runs early on was, I thought, basically just that, like they have so many motions going across that the linebacker just can't figure out what his gap is. And then, you know, you give Corum that like one little inch and we should talk about Blake Corum, right?
Yeah, because the play you're talking about, I remember it wasn't a touchdown,
but no, it got down to like Cornelius Johnson's block and Johnson lost his guy and then he goes down.
Yeah, because the linebacker of that play gets completely, I mean, all that action up front, he overran the hole, mm-hmm. and gave it. It was a built-in cutback or a built-in cut off of that for Blake Corum, who was tremendous. Blake Corum was tremendous.
Haskins was just about as good as Haskins, yeah. You know, the player we love. And in fact, Donovan Edwards, I thought in the end of the game ran pretty well too. So Michigan doesn't really have a question there. This is the strength of the team, as we thought before the season, right. Running back. And, you know, we can hope Zach Charbonnet wins the Heisman. That's fine with me. But Michigan doesn't have any real problems. speaking of Heismans, I thought, you know, Ronnie Bell was on his way to a Heisman about a quarter and a half in, because what kind of a game was he having? That catch that was ruined by the John O'Neill crew.
Should have known.
might be about the best catch I've ever seen in my life. It certainly rivals the Odell Beckham catch, because at least in the Beckham catch, he has his body to drag the ball into. This one, Bell catches it one-handed. He can't get his other hand over because, first of all, he's been grabbed on the top of the jersey, and then there's some hand fighting, and then the hand fighting is his left hand is restrained. So at the hell, I'll just catch it one-handed. And he never uses his body or his other hand, and it's not like a 5-yard out pass that he does this on. This is on like a 30-yard ball down the field. I've never seen it. It's one of the best catches of my lifetime.
And he took it off the board.
And the O'Neill crew took it off the board. The good news, I guess, is we won't see them for a few more weeks at least.
I should have known. I didn't know it was the John O'Neill crew at the time, but it figures,
if
right?
If you were in my section, you know, because they're all used to me complaining about O'Neill. My section is all yelling about, you know, John O'Neill should be in prison.
Oh, God. So. I thought that, like, maybe we'd gotten away with just, like, a, you know, they destroyed one of the greatest plays of all time. And then I'm doing the defense of UFR, too, and they are missing face masks all over the place. They called and then picked up a face mask when there was another face mask on that plate because they missed two of them. I don't want to belabor this point too much, but it's gotten to the point where someone really needs to do something. It's unsafe out there. They're injecting themselves into the game. They have the umpire that they have out there is not watching the game. The side judge doesn't know the rules. Yeah. O'Neill doesn't know the rules. There's one good ref on that crew. It's the know her name.
But the woman, you're right.
The woman on that crew actually was making every. And I started watching it just because I was like, please, please, can I find one competent person on this crew? So keep her. And I'm serious. I'm very serious about this. It's time to get rid of John O'Neill and some of his. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know who they can replace him with. These guys cannot keep on refereeing Big Ten games.
We're gonna make this into a clip. Get rid of John O'Neill. That is going up.
I'm saying it now when in a game that did not matter, right? Because it's going to matter. I mean, this time they took away a beautiful catch by Ronnie Bell 2 plays before we lose Ronnie Bell for the season, right? And that's emotional. But I mean, it's every single down. These people are screwing something up. And I'm saying it now because I don't want people to like come back and be like, oh, it's because, you know, they're terrible to Michigan or whatever. They're terrible to everybody. And now is your opportunity to get rid of this crew. It needs to happen.
And Seth, on this point, just briefly, you know, they did the Nebraska-Illinois game. And I'm no Nebraska fan. I can't stand Scott Frost. I don't like his mom. But they just hammered Nebraska in this game. There were 6 brutal calls, and those brutal calls gave the game to Illinois, and they all went against Nebraska. So, I mean, I was not rooting for Nebraska in that game. This is a terrible crew. They should not be in the Big Ten. The woman on the crew, make her the crew chief and let her hire the other people.
Yeah, it's a damn shame that, you know, when that call happened, it just fits that it was a John O'Neill crew. You know something's going to happen.
I leaned over, I'm like, Sam, it's the O'Neill crew.
He sure did. I didn't know ahead of time. I was like, okay, I get it. We got to get to a break. Be back on the other side. We'll dive deeper into the defensive showing the Wolverines put on versus Western. We'll return here. More MGo Blog Roundtable on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA. The Ticket.
Is the story of the week for me is the Ron Heffley game. You guys saw that, right?
Did not.
Ron Heffley,
10 touchdowns.
He was a walk-on quarterback at Michigan the last 2 years. He threw 10 touchdown passes on Saturday.
Yes. Oh yeah, I thought that was
before. He threw 10 touchdown passes for Presbyterian in an 84-43 win.
Yeah, but that's because they got the coach, Andrews, right?
Who I actually think is a team from Scotland.
It's the high school coach from Arkansas that doesn't punt.
Yeah.
So you can hear Ira.
Yeah.
This is the coach now that never punted in high school at Arkansas.
You know who the coach for Presbyterian is?
There he goes. Those of you listening to this, it's Greg Gross does not have his headphones on.
I got it right, Ira. I got it right.
Kevin Kelly. Kevin Kelly is the coach, and he didn't punt in that game either. He had five fourth downs, fourth and 12, ran a play, fourth and 7, ran a play, you know. So Kevin Kelly is the coach of Presbyterian.
Okay.
So yeah. Speaking of coaching, Jim Harbaugh developed a quarterback.
Kevin Kelly.
Yeah, man. It'll be interesting. I think Giles Jackson, someone just, Austin Cooper just said defense. I don't know about that, but he's like got to be the guy for them now, right?
Well, I don't know. What's the story with their end, with their receivers? Because they didn't play this week. Four of them didn't play.
Yeah, I'll talk to the Washington guys today, as a matter of fact.
Because I don't know.
But the guy who got lost, the fourth receiver, yeah, who was lost on the first game, he's out for the season.
Okay.
He had surgery.
Oh, no. Was it Jalen?
They had three other guys who were
Jalen Polk.
I don't know why they were out or if they were injured.
Yeah, I don't know why either. But that guy who got injured on the first play of the game, yeah. He's done.
Jeez, a lot of like
other weird.
But then, don't you think I'm still baffled by it, because it just doesn't make sense that they weren't able to run the ball any against my. I don't care that they had a tight end and receiver, whatever.
It's John Donovan. Do you remember John Donovan? Craig, put your headphones on so you can hear me.
Says, put your headphones on.
It's John Donovan, Craig.
5 yards running, 65.
That's what I'm saying.
It's John Donovan. Yeah. Last year, Washington fans were like, this is working. This is fine.
I'm getting the ad.
You can't. He's getting the ad. He's not getting the.
So we have to figure out why he doesn't hear.
Oh, okay. So Craig. Okay. So Craig, when we're on an ad, he gets the ad. He doesn't get to hear me.
Yeah, you can't hear Seth. He was just saying it's John Donovan.
It's John Donovan. It's the Penn State offensive coordinator who,
He's the guy who demolished, what's his name, as a quarterback there.
Hackenberg. He's the guy responsible for screwing Hackenberg up. And
he's responsible for screwing Christian Hackenberg.
Saw what happened with Morris too, right? Like Morris was just getting he messes with his lines. Donovan thinks that he's a genius with his offensive lines. He's got a 6'3 guy playing right tackle right now. He doesn't know who his best guard. He's got like a 6'8 guy playing guard. And none of these guys can pass pro. And he did the same thing at Penn State. And Washington fans last year were like, I don't know, actually Donovan did fine, the offensive line did fine. I don't know why these guys, because it's the same guys, were doing fine last year, but they were not fine against Montana, and it was
it's crazy. Yeah.
It's completely mysterious what happened there, and I don't quite understand it. The especially since last year, their offense was good.
Right.
I mean, their defense
They're
was
supposed to have the best offensive line in the Pac-12. Yeah. I mean, we've been talking about it all offseason, like, how is Michigan going to stand up to this gargantuan line? And they come out and they can't, even if you adjust, even if you add the sack yardage back in, they still don't get 100 yards.
Yeah.
No. Like, you got to be kidding me. Montana?
Yeah. And it's not like Montana's App State. You know, when App State played here, that was a real
stand
team.
By, guys. Stand by.
Here you go. Yeah. All right. We are back now with the MGo Blog Roundtable crew. We have Craig Ross and Seth Fisher with us. And so, Seth, what did you think of the defensive performance for the Maize and Blue?
So at first I was like, oh no, because it was, well, they came out in a nickel, right? So that part we guessed right. Their base is really that 2-4-5 nickel, which is really no different than when Don Brown was running out there, except for Dax Hill is your space backer. But then they were so vanilla at the beginning, and then I think it was the third drive, all of a sudden they start doing things right. They start dropping their defensive ends and start blitzing with guys that you don't expect, and start bringing the safeties down and double blitz with the safeties, and that's when it started working. And I think right there, that was the difference, that when they're playing at vanilla and you're letting them sit back and know that you're getting a cover two zone or a cover three zone right off the top, and you can just throw those outs, that they were getting gashed a little bit. And then as soon as that stopped, really it was just the O'Neal crew and a couple linebacker mistakes, and that was it.
Well, I mean, first of all, Dax Hill had an unbelievable game, in my opinion, especially in stopping the bubble screens. I mean, the bubbles went nowhere. Mm-hmm. Vincent Gray made a nice play on early on too, on one that was demolished by a taunting call. But the
which legit, by the way.
We're not saying that was a referee.
that was just a Scott.
Yeah, Michigan played the bubble screens great. And the yards per pass attempt were 4.84, which I guarantee you is probably lower than what Western has done in a long time. And so all around, Michigan played a tremendous game. I saw some complaining they didn't have a lot of pass rush, but Western was getting the ball out quickly. So that sort of minimize that.
Aiden was close a lot of times. Yeah. Like the play where he just if Ellaby holds it like a beat longer, mm-hmm. it would have been a sack. He got destroyed, but the linebackers allowed the inside receiver to get like right down the middle of the field, so he was able to get rid of the ball in time. But those are the kinds of things that you feel like are going to get cleaned up some the more that they play.
In my opinion, Ellaby is probably one of the best three or four at worst quarterbacks we're going to see this year, and maybe better than that. I mean, he was
pretty bad in this game. Like, he was thrown short. When he had time, he was missing, especially the very beginning. I think getting into the big house in front of people kind of messed with him after.
Yeah, that's possible. But he was very good last year. I was very heartened by what I saw out of the defense, and we'll see.
Yeah.
Although I'm not sure of the Washington's offense, although the Washington offense is mystifying because last year they scored a lot of points. They scored a lot of points last year. I'm not sure what's going on.
I'm genuinely shocked by what was on display. Losing to Montana in and of itself is going to be shocking, right? But it's how they lost. Mm-hmm. It's how they lost that
they couldn't
really
move the ball.
They could not run. They could not run the ball against Montana.
65 yards rushing, I think, in 29 carries.
Yeah, with five returning starters
on the O-line.
And I've said it so much. People know the stats. 6'5", 325 across the front. You can't run the football for 100 yards against Montana. So, somewhat, what's going on? Something's going on over there.
So our guy Alex Drain kind of broke this down. And I watched their games last year, and I was like iffy on some of those offensive linemen. I really didn't like the guards, which John Donovan decides to make this game a very guard-centric game. I mean, first of all, they can't pass protect. But second, they don't know who they're blocking. And when they're blocking, they're tall guys. Like, I think one of them is like 6'8". Like, they're supposed to be tackles that they were recruited to be. And he's got them playing inside where they can't get any movement on defensive tackles because those guys are, a foot below them. So they just can't – they're not in their right roles. And this is the thing that, Penn State – I know some Penn State fans really well, and we talk football all the time. So I got a lot of John Donovan complaining from, the X's and O's side of Penn State fandom before. Well,
that would make sense then, because personnel-wise, there's no explanation for them not being able to run the football, even with the receiver. I know the receivers are out. We talked about it last week. Top three guys didn't play in that game. The number four guy gets injured on the first play. He's now done for the season. I don't care if they play offensive lineman at receiver in this game. They should be able to run the football for at least 100 yards against Montana with that offensive line.
Alex, who's new at MGO Blog and works like a demon. I mean, this kid is obsessive. And if you look at his film study that was posted yesterday, along with Seth's UFR, both are fantastic. And as high a quality work as you can see in this arena, and he watched the Montana game and decided that the Washington offensive line was completely dominated. He said they were completely dominated by the Montana line. This wasn't anything that was some sort of weird fluke. He also said the quarterback play was terrible.
Which you can sort of anticipate that. Anticipate and they all want the backup.
I agree with them. Everyone wants Sam Heward.
I agree with them. Because Heward, at the very least, that guy's got an arm. And one of the problems that Morris had is, I know the receivers are injured, but they've got Kate Otten, who is Jake Butt. and they're blocking with Otten and actually making a lot of the plays based off of Otten blocks, and he's not a blocker. But you put that guy downfield, and he's going to be a mismatch against any safety. It was a huge mismatch against the Montana safeties, and I think his best catch all night was he was wide open. So like they're scheming to try to get that guy open when all you have to do is scheme to get that guy in a single matchup with a little bit of leverage. And again, John Donovan is such a bad offensive coordinator. I don't know how this guy got another job.
But Seth, you're okay. This explains a lot because, like, I'm going to be talking to the Washington guys for our preview. But one of my questions was going to be, like, is something going on internally with your team or with Washington? Like, what? Because you got to explain how you're this bad running the football. It doesn't even matter to me what you're missing when you're this bad with what's supposed to be your strength. Like, you shouldn't have to call a single pass play with their offensive line against Montana. You shouldn't.
I mean, I'm just looking at the Washington scores from last year. Now, they only played four games. I'm not sure what the Utah score was. They beat Utah, but they beat Oregon State 27-21, 44-27 against Zona, and they lost to Stanford 26-31. So their defense looks pretty bad. Their offense looks like it's effective. I don't know how they can go out and score seven. And that was on the first drive. They scored 7 points on a scripted drive on their first drive. They scored nothing thereafter against Montana, an FCS school. I don't know.
Yeah, so let's talk about Michigan's defense for a beat here, guys. Look, this was not – the Western game was not going to test them in the way that I thought would be preparation for – or Washington, right? They are. This is not a
right. It's different.
This is not a stalwart running team. The test was going to be, how do you hold up on the back end? I think we covered that a bit. And just to touch on that for a moment, I want you guys' opinion on this. Dax Hill was a huge part of their disguise.
Right.
The way that they use him, he could be an All-American. If the first game was an indicator, and you can't make any judgments on one game. But he's all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, more than an All-American, perhaps from his point of view, he's a first-round draft pick. And because if you can play corner, if you can cover guys, you know he can. You can slide him to safety too. But as a slot corner, he's a first-round NFL
pick. Just compare and contrast. So Michigan is 3rd-and-3, and you know, Western goes zero coverage and they wind up with a safety on Ronnie Bell. Yeah. And they're just, you know, you're licking your chops.
Sayonara,
it's a touchdown. If you flip the script, that's Hill that would be on that receiver. It's just a luxury most teams don't have. He lined up outside a couple of plays, but at the nickel, Seth, his ability to blitz, to play the run, to be involved in their disguises in a huge way so he can fake a blitz, you know, achieve depth on his drop, still rally to the football and make plays at the line of scrimmage. It's just athleticism and versatility that if they can play him in nickel mostly, and I'm saying if because good first game for the corners, good first game for Vince Gray, confidence builder. I'm not ready to say that problem has been solved, but a good start. But if those guys hold up and you can keep Dax in that position at the nickel the way they're using him, he could be All-American, Seth.
I mean, they're using him exactly how we used Peppers in 2015, before pre-Don Brown. And the difference between that and Don Brown is Don Brown had him doing a lot more linebacker things and locked him to the tight end side, where he was more of a true nickel in 2015. And Dax Hill is perfect for this role. Three times they tried to edge him, and there was a fourth, I thought, in there too, which was just a running back kick in the flat. And you cannot edge that guy. And how do you defeat teams that play in space, that try to spread you out and give you and use all that space in between there? It's speed. You have the guy sit back, and he actually has the speed to get in and play that. So Michigan played with a soft edge a few times where they could actually, like, just did not have an outside linebacker on that side because Dax Hill was your outside linebacker. Now, the next step is maybe not John Donovan because he's an idiot, but we'll face an offensive coordinator who's going to know how to scheme him into more linebacker jobs. because if you just have that guy playing nickel, he's going to kill you all day. And if you try to test that guy in the edge, it's going to kill you. And that set, I mean, that takes away so many scary things that, like, you can play your base defense all day against RPOs, and they can't get you because you have that ability. So that's huge for him. The rest of the defense, I want to throw some flags out there. I was very concerned about the zone coverage. Jamon Green is a way better man cover guy than a zone cover guy. He was lost on a lot of zones there. Their cover three needs a lot of work. It's like high school level vanilla right now. Cover three does not cover out routes anyway, but those were more open than they should have been. And the linebackers, I think Josh Ross is too much on his plate right now.
Yeah, so they were, I thought the linebacker position was the one that was maybe the biggest sore spot for them.
Ross specifically.
Bad eyes on a couple of occasions, bad eyes in the red zone. I think that one was Nakai. Josh had some moments in coverage. The one where Aiden almost kills the quarterback. Yeah. If Josh can get if he can redirect that receiver a bit, just get a hand on him, impede him a little bit, Aiden Hutchinson gets that sack. And so it's, I look at it this way. This was a team that they played a lot of one type of zone, and they were mostly a man team. This is all new to them. And so I'm not surprised that they have some holes. I'm curious what you guys think of, you know, when I talked to Steve Klinkscale coming in, he said, we're going to be, I think you got to be a little bit of both spot drop and pattern matching. I mentioned that to Vance Biffer, he was like, what? he's like both? Really? He's like, that's going to be interesting. And I think his reaction illustrates the point, especially with these guys coming off of really a really limited conceptually defense, that they probably are equipped to do all of that right now. I think they got to get good at the base, get good in spot drops, and then maybe you can expand upon that down the line.
Yeah.
Well, for a team that has some ability at covering in man, wouldn't pattern matching work better? I mean, it's just
tougher to teach.
Yeah.
Tougher to teach. Longer to teach.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's a reason why Michigan State like holds on to their players until their 20th years before they even get them out there. Or did under D'Antonio, right? Like, that is a tough defense to learn. It's easier to teach the cover three version of pattern matching, but that ends up just being man a lot of times. So, I mean, it's not very, very different than cover one. I think this team could be a good quarters team eventually, especially if you just lock Jamon Green to a guy. But you have two cornerbacks, and I think that, you know, the prediction was correct that Vincent Gray is the second cornerback, and despite all the talk, and they just couldn't say it but Vincent Gray had a good game because they were playing zone, and that's his wheelhouse. So you've got one cornerback who is really good in zone and might be a liability in man, and you have another cornerback who is really good at man, and it looks like a liability in zone. So I think that maybe split coverage is the answer, like teach them cover six.
Yeah, you know, although with Vincent Gray, and I made it a point to do this all week, I mean, his best play came in man-to-man defense.
Yeah.
Man, he's locked up on like a dude. It's at least speed-wise. Mm-hmm. The receiver he's covering is one of the fastest guys in the country.
Is he?
Vincent Gray beat. He had Vincent Gray beat by a step. Step and a half. And Vincent didn't lose ground while the ball was in the air. And most importantly, he didn't interfere. He didn't grab him. You saw his hands start to go out. He pulls his hands back, then he makes a play on the football. I don't think too much can be made of what kind of confidence builder that had to be for him in this game. Now, can he build on that? Can he continue that kind of thing? You hope so. I think maybe a part of it is it's not like every play he's in man-to-man defense, right? I mean, they mix it up. He's able to rally to the football, uses physicality, tackle in space. And how about that, Seth? The secondary tackled exceptionally well in this game.
That's true. That is very true. And, I mean, shout out to Vincent Gray for that first shot, too. Dax Hill, his play is so much better. I know we already did Dax, but, like, his play is so much better than last year. And I don't want to start calling out, like, after one game coaching, but the difference between Bob Shoup coaching from Zoom or whatever he was doing last year, and Ron Bellamy is like epic. It was huge. There were some things from Brad Hawkins that I didn't like, but it was mostly when they had him kind of coming down and being a linebacker, and you could tell they're putting a lot on his plate, and they're putting a lot on Josh Ross's plate. And a lot of the negatives came, I think, from that the defense asked those guys to make a lot of hard reads and do a lot of different things. But like the play from Moten was incredible. And these guys mostly knew where they were going, and they're running complex schemes out there. And when they didn't know what to do, the safeties, and the cornerbacks didn't do this, but the safeties, when they didn't know what to do, they were smart about it. They just got back, and they're like, okay, worst case scenario, I'm going to give up a couple yards, and then I'm going to make we'll make the tackle. These guys look well coached. And they looked awfully coached last year. And I don't know if one offseason with Ron Bellamy is the reason or what. But I am starting to have some sense that Ron Bellamy knows what he's doing out there at safety coach.
Yeah, certainly Bellamy and Steve Klinkscale, the tandem.
And Klinkscale.
Definitely enhancing their ability to vary their coverages on the back end. I don't think there's any question about that. And I thought, man. The tackling, you just cannot emphasize that enough. I think putting them in position, not asking as much man as they asked last year, I think has to be a relief to a guy like Vincent, and part of helping him build his confidence up, make some plays short. Then when he's tested deep late, he has enough confidence to trust his technique and make a play. But let's talk Washington. Let's, you know, sort of quarterback this matchup for me based on what we saw versus Western, based on what, you know, you saw Washington versus Montana. Has your view of this game changed any, Craig?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm still completely mystified. Alex's writing notwithstanding about what was going on with Washington and their opener. I mean, it's impossible for me to believe they're that bad. And so at least on offense. And so it just seems to me they're very likely to come out and play a much better game offensively for sure than what they did against Montana. And it may be they have guys out and that they're just not really paying attention to Montana. This is just a warm-up game. We're preparing for Michigan. That's our big game. And the next thing they know, they get bit by a team that actually is taking the game seriously and has some ability. I don't know. But I suspect we're going to get a better effort and a harder game out of Washington than what we saw against Montana.
All right, Seth, I certainly want to hear about the matchup, but is your view of this game different than it was prior to game one?
I mean, other than their offensive line, no. Not a whole lot changed about my thoughts on Michigan. I thought that Ross was going to be a little bit overmatched by all the things that are on his plate, and he kind of was. I thought Nikhyle Green was pretty good. And he's going to be he's the kind of guy who'll be really effective against this kind of offense because he activates quickly and he doesn't mind sticking his nose in there. That was the one kind of change. That guy and RJ Moten were two guys I didn't really have an opinion on before because we hadn't seen them, and I think they're a lot better.
How did Colson play when he came in? Because my impression was he played pretty well.
He's got the difference in athleticism. When he's running the guy out of bounds between him and some of the other guys is remarkable. It's just, now I don't think he's got the defense down yet, and like I said, there's a lot on Josh Ross's plate.
Yeah, it's funny, Hilo, we talked to him in the preseason and he said he can run. The question is, can he find his way to the bathroom? Because his point was he can run fast, we just gotta run him in the right direction. So he's still learning the defense was the point. Jimmy Lake. I mean, I know there's all this talk about Michigan's coaching staff and Jim Harbaugh, but I wonder if the pressure isn't greater on Jimmy Lake heading into this game.
I mean, yeah, Lake is going to have a Michigan game plan, I think. And defensively, we haven't seen the faux film yet, but defensively, I mean, they got Tuli and Taki up front. And that is Sam Taki Taimani and Tuli Latuli Gasanoa, by the way.
Somebody's laughing. We need you to have a cameo appearance.
Where do you see Grapentine tomorrow night? That or Friday, Saturday night? He is ready, that man.
It's 5 years to be able to say Antetokounmpo.
Yeah. Adefuano Lafoscio, he's their linebacker. He's kind of a Devin Butch type.
Wait, how did you say that name? Because Jim just said number 48.
What's his name again? Ulfoscio.
I mean the first name.
Oh, Edifuan.
Edifuan.
Edifuan is I think that was correct. I looked it up on the thing. Am I right? 48.
I'm impressed, Seth. All right. Give me a winner and a score in this game, guys. Winner score.
Michigan wins this game, low scoring, 24-9.
Wow. All
right. Yeah, 33-14. I think this is a good just a good old night in the big house.
Dude, if they do that, I mean, the momentum I think it could help them have in recruiting.
This is a huge weekend for Michigan. This is just huge. It's one of the biggest games really in a while because they've, you know, the fans are feeling good. It's a night game, but hopefully it'll be a maze out. I mean, Michigan fans are like herding cats, but that's, you know, you never can tell. And you've got a lot of people in who are interested in, is this a place I want to go to school or want to play?
What percentage do you think are going to be in Mays? Because, like you said, Michigan fans.
80%. 80%. I think they'll show up in Mays.
55.
Sam, you are quite optimistic.
Really? You don't think they'll show up and show out in Mays?
No.
If you take the student section out, I would go below 50%.
Michigan fans are the sweatshirtiest fan base in the country.
Haven't been to a game in years. It's been hyped up for a while.
And the temperature's going to drop at night, and not everybody has a Maze jacket or sweatshirt.
Yeah.
They need 100,000 XXL Maze t-shirts on seats.
Put Maze pom-poms on every seat.
That's what they should do.
That's what they should do. Come on,
give us the towels again. Especially if you're going to have the O'Neill crew, you need to have towels out there.
We're not getting O'Neill crew this week.
We got to get out of here.